Kapoti prathamam gharbam Grihananti kala agate Andani shushuve nidhe Sapatayu sannidhau sati Kapoti prathamam gharbam Grihananti kala agate Andani shushuve nidhe Sapatayu sannidhau sati Kapoti prathamam gharbam Grihananti kala agate Andani shushuve nidhe Sapatayu sannidhau sati Matajis? Kapoti, the female pigeon. Prathamam, her first. Garbham, pregnancy. Grihananti, carrying. Kale, when the time for delivery. Agate, had come. Andani, eggs. Sushuve, she delivered. Nidhe, in the nest. Sapatayu, of her husband. Sannidhau, in the presence. Sati, the chaste. So today we'll be taking the slokas from verse 57 to 74. There are around 17 slokas. So I was asked to read all the translations of all the 17 slokas. So text 57, the translation is as follows. Then the female pigeon experienced her first pregnancy. When the time arrived, the chaste lady delivered a number of eggs within the nest in the presence of her husband. Next sloka. When the time was ripe, baby pigeons with tender limbs and feathers created by the inconceivable potencies of the Lord were born from those eggs. Next sloka. The two pigeons became very affectionate to their children and took great pleasure in listening to their awkward chirping, which sounded very sweet to the parents. Thus with love they began to raise the little birds who were born of them. The parent birds became very joyful by observing the soft wings of the children, their chirping, their lovely innocent movements around the nest, and their attempts to jump up and fly. Seeing the children happy, the parents were also happy. Their hearts bound to each other by affection, the foolish birds, completely bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, continued to take care of the young offspring who had been born of them. One day, the two heads of the family went out to find food for the children. Being very anxious to feed their offspring properly, they wandered all over the forest for a long time. At that time, a certain hunter, who happened to be wandering through the forest, saw the young pigeons moving about near their nest. Spreading out his net, he captured them all. The pigeon and his wife were always anxious for the maintenance of the children, and they were wandering in the forest for that purpose. Having obtained proper food, they now returned to the nest. When the lady pigeon caught sight of her own children trapped within the hunter's net, she was overwhelmed with anguish, and crying out, she rushed towards them as they cried out to her in return. The lady pigeon had always allowed herself to be bound by the ropes of intense material affection, and thus her mind was overwhelmed by anguish. Being in the grip of the illusion energy of the Lord, she completely forgot herself, and rushing forward to her helpless children, she was immediately bound in the hunter's net. Seeing her own children, who were more dear to him than life itself, fatally bound in the hunter's net, along with his dearmost wife, whom he considered equal in every way to himself, the poor male pigeon began to lament wretchedly. The male pigeon said, "Alas, just see how I am now destroyed. I am obviously a great fool, for I did not properly execute pious activities. I could not satisfy myself, nor could I fulfill the purpose of life. My dear family, which was the basis of my religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, is now hopelessly ruined." There's a purport to this. We'll read the purport also. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word atrapatsya indicates that the pigeon was not satisfied with the sense gratification he had achieved. Although he was completely attached to his wife, children and nest, he could not sufficiently enjoy them, since there is ultimately no satisfaction in such things. Akratasya indicates that his hopes and dreams for future expansion of his sense gratification were now also ruined. People commonly refer to their home, sweet home, as the nest, and money put aside for future sense gratification is called a nest egg. Therefore, all of the lovebirds of the material world should clearly note how their so-called wife, children, and fortune will all be dragged away in the hunter's net. In other words, death will finish everything. Translation of the next verse. My wife and I were an ideal match. She always faithfully obeyed me and in fact accepted me as her worshipable deity. But now, seeing her children lost and her home empty, she has left me behind and gone to heaven with our saintly children. Now I am a wretched person living in an empty house. My wife is dead. My children are dead. Why should I possibly want to live? My heart is so pained by separation from my family that life itself has become simply suffering. As the father pigeon wretchedly stared at his poor children trapped in the net and on the verge of death, pathetically struggling to free themselves, his mind went blank, and thus he himself fell into the hunter's net. The cruel hunter, having fulfilled his desire by capturing the head pigeon, his wife, and all of the children, set off for his own home. In this way, one who is too attached to family life becomes disturbed at heart. Like the pigeon, he tries to find pleasure in mundane sex attraction. Busily engaged in maintaining his own family, the miserly person is fated to suffer greatly, along with all his family members. In the last sloka, the translation, the doors of liberation are open wide to one who has achieved human life. But if a human being simply devotes himself to family life, like the foolish bird in the story, then he is to be considered as one who has climbed to a high place only to trip and fall down. ओम ज्ञान्ति विनन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जन शलाकया चक्षुलो मिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः. श्री चैतन्य मनोभेस्तं स्थापितमेन भूतले स्वयं रूपा गदामाद्य तदाति स्वपदामितं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुक्ता पदकमलं श्रीगुरु वैष्णवंश श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगना रघुनाथं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं साधभूतं परिजनसहित कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखामितांश. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते. तप्त कंचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुवैश कृपा सिंधु एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधा श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम रामो रामो हरे 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 कृष्णा. So I seek the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas so that I am empowered to speak something. If one reads all through these 17 slokas, basically they revolve around family and family attachment. Now, say when a young couple before marriage, they are attracted to each other, then the engagement happens, then the marriage date is fixed. Then both this couple, the young male and female, they look forward for that marriage day. And they're very excited about it. And then on the marriage day, they are very happy. The marriage happens. Then they go on honeymoon also. Then they are very happy. They're happy for a month, few months, maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years. Then after that, that marriage syndrome starts fading out. Then there are more clashes. Then they see the challenges more frequently of the grihastha ashram. And as time goes, they start tolerating just each other. And sometimes their divorces also because there's so much difference of opinion. In fact, some marriage experts say, they define marriage as an institute of adjustments. I repeat again. They define marriage as an institute of adjustments. Now, if to a young couple who's just going to get married, you tell them this definition, they will not relate to it. But that same couple, after 15 years, if they live through, you tell them the same definition, they'll give 3 stars to the statement. Basically, the scriptures say that the family life, grihastha ashram, there are many challenges. I counsel families also, I give parenting seminars all over India. Married people come to me for counseling, for inputs. I will just tell you that some of the challenges which is faced in the family life. There is one family which I'm aware of. The son is around 7 years old. So the son, he locked himself in a room. And he was not opening the door. So his parents, they were anxious. They told, beta, open the door. Son, open the door. He was not opening. 10 minutes gone. 15 minutes gone. Half an hour gone. They're saying, son, open the door. Son is not opening. He's a 7 year son. He's telling to his parents. He's shouting and telling them, I will open the door only on one condition. So the parents are, what? Tell us. So the son is saying, I'll open the door on one condition that you promise me that you'll buy me a personal laptop. It's a true scenario. What did the son say? See, he's not a 15-year child or 16-year child. 7-year boy. He's saying, I will not open the door till you don't promise me you buy me a personal laptop. A personal laptop. Another instance I'll give you. This happened in Pune. A 12-year boy, in the night, he was in his room on his mobile doing some WhatsApp. Then it was dinner time. The mother comes to the son's room and says, "Son, come, let's go for dinner. Father and me are waiting for you." The son, "Mummy, give me 2 minutes. Mother said, "Okay." Mummy, after 2 minutes, comes back. "Son, let's go for dinner. Mummy, 2 more minutes. So mother goes to the father and says, "Son is asking for 2 more minutes. Again, after 2 minutes, the mother goes, "Son, 2 more minutes over. Mummy, 2 more minutes. So again, the mother comes back. Now this happened 4 times. 5th time, mother goes to the son, "Beta, we are waiting for dinner. Come. Mummy, 2 more minutes. Mummy's saturation level had gone up already. Mummy just grabbed hold of the son's mobile, took it, and went to the dining table and told the father, "God knows when our son will come for dinner. Let's start having dinner." So the father and the mother start having dinner. So what does this child do? This is a true scenario. I'm not exaggerating. The child, he goes to the kitchen. He takes a kitchen knife and comes to murder his mother. What does the child do? He takes this kitchen knife and comes to murder his mother. Somehow the father protects and avoids this scenario. Now, these are some trailers of family life. I'm not here to tell a horror story about family life. I'm just come here to tell you the practical, down-to-earth reality. There's so many challenges. There's a saying sometimes in lectures, they say that love at first sight and divorce at first fight. Because the tolerance level, the patience level are going down now. And the family to live together has become more challenging. And there's a story. There was a person, he was having his wedding anniversary, his 51st wedding anniversary. He was celebrating his 51st wedding anniversary. So a lot of his friends had come. So one friend, towards the end of the anniversary, towards the end of this function, went to the husband whose 51st anniversary was being celebrated. So the friend asks him, "Wow, great. 51 years you lived with your wife. Amazing." So the friend asked this husband that, "Tell me, on your 25th marriage anniversary, what did you do? How did you celebrate?" So this husband said, "You know, my wife, they were staying in the US, this husband and wife couple. So the husband said, "Actually, you know, my wife for many years was telling me that she had a deep desire to go to Beijing. Beijing is the capital of China." So the husband said, "For my 25th marriage anniversary, I took my wife to Beijing." Husband said, "Wow, great, you're a fantastic husband." So the friend asked the same husband, "Okay, tell me, for your 50th marriage anniversary, what did you do?" So the husband said, "For my 50th marriage anniversary, I went back to Beijing to get her back." So anyway, this is just for a light moment. You know, sometimes just to the husband and wife to stay together, big, big challenge, especially in Kali Yuga, you know, the tolerance level is down, patience level is down. It's a big challenge. But if we keep Krishna in the center, then we can live this challenge in a nice way. People normally describe as family life as a deep, dark well. It's a deep, dark well when there's no Krishna in the center. When there's no genuine spiritual life in the center, believe me, family life is a deep, dark well. I counsel families. Many families come to me. You'll be surprised at the type of problems they face. I'll be a little embarrassed to tell some of them. It's just unbelievable, some of the problems, some of the challenges and some of the difficulties the husband and wife, they face. But it's a deep dark hole. Why? Because there's no Krishna at the center. And what happens normally in family life today? Each person basically want to get maximum sense enjoyment out of that. People get married. Why? For sense enjoyment. For the personal enjoyment. And the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Acharyas have always defined that wherever you try to keep your own sense enjoyment in the center, you'll have more misery. And in a family life, to the degree we keep Krishna and genuine spiritual life in the center, to that degree we'll find less misery. Once Devamrit Maharaj, he was giving a talk and he was saying that we are looking for an ended sense gratification. He was saying what? We individuals are looking for unended sense gratification. And Maharaj mentioned, there are only two places you'll find this. Only two places. One is in Golok Vrindavan and the second is in our imagination. Only these two places. So we have, to the degree we follow genuine spiritual life in a family life, to that degree will be less problem and to that degree will be more satisfied. And then, in the scriptures, there's a very wonderful story in reference to family life, the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. Now, Chitraketu Maharaj, he was a king, he had fantastic big kingdom, all the riches, everything. He had many wives also. But he didn't have any single son. So he was very morose regarding that. So once Angira Rishi had come to his kingdom. And Chitraketu Maharaj served Angira Rishi very well. In a very humble way. And he really pleased Angira Rishi. So Angira Rishi asked Chitraketu Maharaj, what can I do for you? So Chitraketu Maharaj said that, Rishivar, I don't have a son. Please do something so I have a son. So Angira Muni said, okay. So Angira Muni performed a yajna, performed a sacrifice. And the prasad of that sacrifice, he gave it to the main wife of Chitraketu Maharaj. And when this wife took that, then she, later on, she became pregnant. And Angira Rishi had told previously to Chitraketu Maharaj that you'll have a son, but he'll be Harshashok. He'll be the cause of your joy and lamentation. So Chitraketu Maharaj basically didn't understand the statement properly. He thought, okay, it'll be joyous because I'm not having a son, and when I have a son, obviously it'll be a very joyous event. And he thought, lamentation, he thought, okay, maybe, you know, when my son grows up, he'll be the only son, and when he grows up, he'll have a lot of riches, and he may become proud. So he may not be an obedient son to me. So from that anger, he may be sort of source of lamentation, but that's okay, because at least I'm having a son. In English, there's a saying, it is better to have a blind and lame uncle than having no uncle. So Chitraketu Maharaj had that thing in mind, chalo, even though my son is not obedient to me, at least I'll have a son. But he didn't know in what way he was going to lament. So when the wife delivered, it was a very joyous occasion for the whole family, for the whole kingdom. But now, the king, Chitraketu, started giving more time and love to the first queen who had delivered the child. And somehow the other queens became neglected. So the other queens became very envious. And somehow secretly, they poisoned the food of this young son. And the young son died. And when the young son died, and when the news reached Chitraketu Maharaj, Chitraketu Maharaj was totally, totally devastated. He was just, his sorrow was uncontrollable. His misery was to the extreme. It was the end of the world for him. Because it is said, to the degree we are attached to anything, and when that thing is taken away, to that same degree we'll be more miserable. So Chitraketu Maharaj was just so attached to the son that when the son was taken away, he was equally miserable. And he was very, very miserable. His wife, the main wife, was also totally miserable. The other wives were poisoned. They were just acting as if they were miserable, you know. So that time, Angira Rishi and Narad Muni come. So when they see the situation, then the two sages instructed the king. I'll read the exact instruction. The two sages instructed the king as follows. O king, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? And what relationship do you have with him? You may say that you are now related as father and son. But do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? Very instructive instructions. Then Narad Muni, with his mystic power, he brought the dead child back to life. And Narad Muni told the child, when he came to life, the child, Narad Muni told the child that why you're causing so much moroseness to your father and son, to your parents, to your mother and father. So when the son heard this instruction, this thing, then the son also replies. I'll read you the exact reply of the son, the dead son who now has risen to life. He replies, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? And then Narad Muni and Narad Muni instructs further to Chitrakuti Maharaj and his wife. And after hearing all these valuable instructions, Chitrakuti Maharaj and his wife, they come out of this family entanglement. They come out of this family attachment. So again, here we should learn that this family attachment and family entanglement, it's such a big knot in our heart. It's a very big knot to be attached to your wife, to be attached to your husband, to be attached to your son, in a family, to be attached to your money, to be attached to your house, to be attached to your business, to be attached to your relatives. So many attachments, this list goes on and on. And these attachments are like big knots in the heart. And it's impossible to remove these family attachments. Impossible. It's only by the causeless mercy of Krishna that these attachments can be removed. And the family, in fact, when around 20 years back, I and my wife, Leela Manjit Devidasi, got married around 20 years back. And it was a marriage arranged through the temple. And my wife, Leela Manjri, she was basically preached by Bhakti Rasamit Maharaj, who was that time Devamit Prabhu. So after we got married, we had gone to Bhakti Rasamit Maharaj. And Bhakti Rasamit Maharaj just told us one sentence. And to this day, I must have repeated the sentence to n number of family people. And I remember this instruction very strongly. Bhakti Rasamit Maharaj just told us one thing. Bhakti Rasamit Maharaj looked at me and told me, Srivas Thakur Das, you should see your wife first as a devotee, then second as your wife. And Maharaj told my wife, Leela Manji, that you should see your husband first as a Vaishnava, first as a devotee, then second as your husband. What a fantastic instruction. Just if we keep this concept in our married life, our married life will be like, in fact, like, you know, it will be like Golok Vrindavan. In fact, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he had so many children. He was a magistrate of, from a worldly angle, so many responsibilities. His whole day schedule was so hectic. But in the evening, when he would come to his home, he said, when he would come to his home, he would see his home as the spiritual world. Why? Because he put this in principle in mind. He put Krishna the center. So in a family life, when we put Krishna in the center and live and try to live a genuine spiritual life, our family will be not different from the spiritual world. And another thing is that usually we see our children as his my child, his my wife, my husband. You know the word my. We should see our wife and children as the property of Guru and Krishna. If we see it with that concept, we'll have a very happy married life. So like I said, if you keep spiritual life in the center, a family life will be not different from the spiritual world. In this reference, there's a saying, a family that prays together stays together. A family that dances together advances together. A family that sings together clings together. Again, the center point, if you keep Krishna at the center, if you keep spiritual life in the center. And another thing, our attachments in family life will increase or decrease as per the association we keep. Especially as grihasthas in family life, it is very, very important. It is like mandatory that we should have strong association of the renounced order. Very important. We should have strong association, especially of sannyasis and the brahmacharis. Through that, we family people, the hard knot which is there in our life, we can get rid of that knot. And the thing is, we should cultivate these detachments in family life from the beginning itself. Sometimes we think, "Arey, now we've got married, we have children, let's enjoy." Later on, detachment dekha jayega. But later on, that detachment doesn't come. It's not so easy. If all our life we have been just seeing things and working on the level as attached, household and family life, later to bring this detachment in a family life is very, very, very difficult. Almost like impossible. In this reference, I would like to tell you something. Once there was a young person. He had moved to a city and he worked very hard. He didn't have any money. He started from scratch. He worked very hard, got some money. He got a small business. He made a small shop. He worked harder, got more money. He made that shop bigger. Like that, he made his shop very big. And he had got married. He had a children. Then his children got married. He had grandchildren. And by this time, this man had worked very hard and made a very big business for his children. A very big shop. So now this man, he was very old. So sometimes he would, now basically his children had taken over the business and they were handling the business. So this old man would sometimes just come to the shop and just sit, you know. So once one Rishi Muni, a sadhu had come to the shop. So the son of this old man asks this sadhu that, "How are you? Where are you going?" So the sadhu said, "I'm going to Banaras now." So the son said, "Acha, you're going to Banaras? I have a request. I have a kind request. I have this father. He's very old now. Can you take him to Banaras also? He's never gone to his life to Banaras. Can you take him? I'll give all the expenses, plus I'll give you some donation, dakshina. Please kindly take my father." So that sadhu said, "Okay, no problem. I will take your father." So the father, the son asked the father, "Would you like to go Banaras?" Father said, "Okay, I will go, no problem." He was retired, he had nothing much to do. So the father and sadhu go to Banaras. So this sadhu takes this old gentleman to different various temples and like that. So this old man would see the temples, bow down, just like that. And then, after seeing the temple, then this sadhu and the old man, they were walking through the streets of Banaras. And they were walking through that area where they were burning dead bodies, Samshan Ghat. So in Banaras, basically, many, many people, when they die, the family members bring the dead body to Banaras to do the last rites because it's considered very auspicious. So there were many bodies burning, many bodies burning. So as the sadhu and the old man, they were crossing, this old man just stood there still. So the sadhu saw that the old man has stopped and is looking at all these burning bodies. So the sadhu also stopped. Then after some time, this old man started weeping. Tears started coming in his eyes. So the sadhu thought, "God, it looks like this old man is having thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of vairagya." So the sadhu asked this old man, "Ki, why are you having these tears in your eyes? And your tears are coming from your eyes." So this old man said, "You know, I'm lamenting that why 50 years back I did not come to Banaras. I'm lamenting that, you know, that I did not come to Banaras 50 years back. If I had come to Banaras 50 years back, so many bodies are being burned. There's so much wood would be required. If I had come 50 years back, I would have started a good wood business and I would have earned much more money. So I'm lamenting that, you know, I missed this opportunity to make more money in life." So the point what I'm trying to say, this detachment. This man, all the time he was thinking of vitamin M. Money, 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 money. And his last stage of life also, even though he's crossing all these dead bodies, what is thinking? Paisa, money. So the point is, in family life, we have to cultivate the spirit of detachment right as early as possible. Prabhupada very nicely, he's given the definition of attachment. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 56, Prabhupada defines attachment as, Prabhupada says, attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification. So nice. I'm like, this is the definition of attachment. Then, when speaking of attachment in family life, the scriptures mention that Indra was once cursed. He was cursed to be born in the earthly planet as a hog. So he was born in the earthly planet as a hog. Then he had his wife hog, he had his own children, and he was living. So when the curse got over, the demigods requested Indra that your curse is over now, please come back to the heavenly planet to resume your other services. So Indra said, no, I will not want to come. I'm happier. I have my wife hog, I have my children. I'm happy. I don't want to come up. Now just imagine, Indra, the type of facility and the position, Indra, as a hog, the thing is, in family life, we get so entangled, that entanglement, it's so much that, proper reason and logic doesn't sometimes make sense to us. Imagine, as a hog, Indra was happier, and he didn't want to leave that hog's body. Just imagine what attachment, family attachment can lead us to. So Indra declined to come up. He said, no, let me live as a hog. I'm very happy. I want to continue living. So finally, after some time, when his young hog children died in front of him, and all his children died, then Indra came back to his senses. Then he started suffering. He thought, God, all my children are gone. It was a big pain to his heart. Then he came to his senses. Then he came back as Indra in the demigod planets. So again, the attachment in family life, it's just impossible to break that attachment. Attachment to one's children, to wife, name, fame, and so many things. It's only by the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, this attachment can be broken off. Then in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 10, in the purport, Prabhupada gives the understanding that if we want to be happy in family life, we should do four things. Prabhupada says, the first is that chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Second, accept the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna. Third, have some discussions on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Fourth, engage oneself in deity worship. And Prabhupada says that one should train the family members in this way. Again, the center theme, we should keep Krishna and spiritual life in the center. And when you're talking of family members, the scriptures give a very nice example. The temporary nature of family life or the family attachment. The scriptures say that we family members, it is like in a river, in a flowing water in the river. Say there are many twigs which are floating in the water. Say two twigs just float and come to each other. They bump into each other. And then one twig again in the waves leaves one twig and again goes and bumps in another twig. Again for some time it is there. Again goes to another twig. So the scriptures say our family relationship is like that among our family members. It's like two twigs. We come for some time, again separate, again two other twigs, again separate. It's very, very temporary in nature. And in fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu, when his brother Hiranyaksha is killed by Lord Vishnu, then Hiranyaksha's wife and all the family members are in total lamentation. They're lamenting. Then Hiranyakashipu, he goes to this family people, and he's a big pandit actually, in one sense, big scholar, and he speaks to them about family detachment. He tells them, why are you being attached to this body? And speaks a lot of Vedic philosophy like a big Sanskrit Pandit. And Hiranyakashipu, he gives this analogy and example to his family people. He's saying, why being so attached to the bodily level? He said, that's very temporary. And Hiranyakashipu tells them this example. He says that family relationship is like, say, when travelers are traveling and say if they go to a restaurant or they could go to a place where they have, there's cool drinking water. And these travelers come together and they drink this cool water. They talk to each other for some time and again separate and take to the different destinations. So Hiranyakashipu is saying our family relationship is like that. The family members who we are, the relationship which we have among our different family members is like this travelers. We come to this drinking point, drinking water point. We mingle for some time. And again, we family members, we take to different destinations. So why cry over through such temporary relationship? This is the philosophy what Hiranyakashipu is speaking. If you just take out the name of Hiranyakashipu in the Bhagavad when he's speaking in, and put a sage's name, it will sound as if a pure devotee is speaking. So again, the temporary nature of a family relationship. Then, in the scriptures, the concept of vanaprastha is also talked about. Now, again, our scriptures, why do they talk of the concept of vanaprastha? They talk of the concept of vanaprastha again to show that there should be detachment in a family life. Again, the concept of detachment. In fact, in family life, say when we are married as family and we have got children and we have not yet entered the vanaprastha ashram. In family life, in the name of family life, in the name of detachment, we should not become irresponsible. Very, very important. I repeat again. In the name of detachment, we should not become irresponsible. When we are married, we have children, we have a wife and we have children. We should show genuine love and concern to our wife, to our children. We should take care of them properly on the physical and emotional plane. We should not behave in a very irresponsible way. But we should understand the spirit of detachment. Whenever we are taking care of a family life, we show them our external love. We take care of them on every level. We genuinely show our love and concern to them. But we should have a spirit of detachment in our heart. Very important. I repeat. In fact, this is one of the main themes I would say of my lecture today, that what is that? In family life, in the name of detachment, we should not become irresponsible, but internally we should have a spirit of detachment, but at the same time we should show genuine love, care and concern to our wife, to our children. But again, like I was mentioning to you, like that these four ashrams, after Grihastha ashram, the husband wife, they advised to go in the vanaprastha. Why this concept? That in vanaprastha ashram, there's both internal and external detachment also. Then, how, now we are talking so much, you all will say that, okay, I'm speaking so much on family problem, family attachment and family miseries. What is the hope? The scriptures tell us that this family attachment we have, this family entanglement which we have, there's a way to get out of it. If we genuinely take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then through that we can come out of this family attachment. And what does it mean? What does it mean to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet? It means that we should do our sadhana regularly and very nicely. That is, you know, reading, hearing, association. We should do our sadhana very regularly. And most important is that we should practice what we hear. See, we, whatever guru, sadhu and sathas we hear from them, we should put into action what we hear. If we don't put into action what we hear, then no effect. And that's family attachment, that family bond would still be in our heart. Say, like, for example, if we hear the good instructions of from the Guru Sadhu and Sastra and if we don't implement it, it's as good as hardly doing anything. There's an example. Say a person who's very sick. He goes to the best doctor. Then the doctor prescribes him the medicine. This man, he goes to the best chemist shop and takes the best medicine and he brings it and he comes to his house and he puts that medicine in the cupboard and he doesn't take it. Will this man get any benefit? No. Till he doesn't take that medicine, he'll not get the benefit of having gone to the doctor. So in the same way, in family life, we have so many instructions from the sannyasis, from the brahmacharis, from the scriptures. But if we don't follow them, we will not get any benefit. And when we speak of the lotus feet of the Lord, I will end with this story. When we speak of the lotus feet of the Lord, there's a story that there was a pond. Ek talab tha, there was a pond. In that pond, there were many fishes. And in that pond, every day in the morning, at 7 in the morning, a fisherman, he would come knee deep in the pond. He would take his net. He would throw his net and catch fishes and go away. And every day he would throw his net in different directions. So all the fishes in that pond, they would always be in anxiety and always suffering. That God, tomorrow I maybe get caught and I'll die. But all the big fishes, they observed that there was a young fish who'd never been in anxiety. So all the big fishes, they made a group and they went to this young fish. And the big fisher told this young fish, "Are, why are you not in anxiety?" So this young fish said, "Why should I be in anxiety?" So the big fisher said, "Don't you know that this fisherman comes every day in the morning, throws his net and catches fish and goes away?" The young fish said, "Yes, I know that. After knowing, still you're not in anxiety." The young fish said, "Yes, why should I be in anxiety?" So the big fishes, they were a little more perplexed. They got more confused. Then the young fish said, "You know, I'm not in anxiety because so far I've never been caught. And in future also, I will never get caught in this fisherman's net." So when the big fishes hear this, they get a little more shocked. They said, they tell this young fish, "How can you say with so much guarantee and with so much conviction that you're never going to get caught in this fisherman's net?" So the young fish says, "I have one formula. I follow one rule." Young fish said, "You know what I do? When this fisherman at 7 in the morning, he comes in the water knee deep. So when he comes in the water shakes. So I come to know that the fisherman has entered the water. So the fisherman is standing knee deep in his water. What I do is I quickly go and stand near the feet of this fisherman." What does the small fish say? "I quickly go and stand near the feet of this fisherman." And this fisherman, when he takes his net, when he throws his net, obviously that net is thrown away and this net does not come near the fisherman's feet. At least 1 or 2 feet away, the net reaches. And the net never comes near the fisherman's feet. So the small fish says, "I do this always and I never get caught." But the spiritual meaning is that, the spiritual lesson is that, that when we take shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the net of Maya will never catch us. I repeat, when we take shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the net of Maya will not catch us. Hare Krishna. So we'll end with that. If anyone has any comments or any question, we can take that. So, okay, Hare Krishna, thank you so much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.